CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday. It's the 20th of September already. Yep. We got a long weekend on the way soon. You're just going to make it through Thursday and Friday. You'll be there before you know it. Right, Ryan?
Yes, it's come quick. It's really, really come quick. I don't know when last you've had holidays. We've had a few, but now it's been a while.
Well, I mean,
so it's nice.
Well, you were away last week, and like it feels like it was ages ago already. So I don't know. Maybe everybody has a different experience of time. It's so bizarre. It's like if you're having fun, it always seems like it's going much too fast.
Exactly.
If you're not having fun, it seems like it's dragging really badly. Did you have wind at your house last night? Because my God, there was like a gale force cyclone type wind here at my house. I saw the trees bending double. It brought on a storm front, which had like, I don't know, 10 drops of rain, which is disappointing. But you know how Buckabuntu keeps going on about like the end is nigh? Well, holy shit.
You won't shut up about it. I mean,
I know. Well, I mean, maybe he's got a point, or maybe everybody always feels that way when crazy weather happens. But honestly, like last night, and I'm sure the people in the comments will say the same thing, it wasn't nice. Yeah. I was looking outside, just waiting for like a tree to be pulled out of the ground or something like that. It was really hectic. I haven't seen wind like that.
I heard you guys had a tree fall this side while I was away.
Oh yeah, very exciting. these are the things that keep us awake at night, you know. We had a tree fall. It was terribly exciting. I just looked at the comments this morning. So here we got Francois listening from South Sudan, which is bloody amazing.
That's awesome.
We've got Leanne, who's listening in Perth, Australia. She's doing the house cleaning this morning. And she says she's de-weeding her paving today while she's listening to us. So she's busy, busy, busy. And Nat Wacko is listening to us from Canada. So, I mean, that's just, there's three places. You couldn't wish for more disparate places than that. All with us this morning. Isn't that cool?
That's fantastic.
Right? I mean, I think it's bloody amazing. I really do. Geis also agrees that the wind was hectic in Pretoria. So, yeah. And Buckabantu's loving this.
Yeah, I know. He's
He's like, yeah, you see, I was right. A lot of source material lately for his end is nigh argument. Yeah, it's becoming a stronger argument. I hate to admit it.
I know.
What can I tell you?
I got cornered. Did I tell you when I was at a braai last week, I got cornered into like a very weird religious discussion, which I try and keep far away from, but this time I was kind of put into a corner about it, and I was asked if I'm religious, number one, and if I'm not, when am I going to do the right thing because the time is coming?
Oh wow! So these people basically saying we're all about to die. You know, the end times.
The end time is near.
Right. And then they tried to pressure you into conversion.
Well, I don't know if they're pressuring me into conversion. They were just like, dude, when this thing happens, what are you going to do? And I was like, what do you mean?
Do you start to engage with people like that, or you just try and get away as quickly as possible?
I try and get away, but for some reason that night, I was like, you know what? It was the first time I met this guy. I was like, I don't want to blow him off. Yeah. So let me just have this conversation. And I actually called it outright, and I was like, you know, what are you on about? And he told me about some river that either four angels or four demons were buried under. And it was said in the Bible, apparently, which has been edited many, many times, that this river needs to stay full in order for the demons or angels or whatever to be buried underneath. And right now it's drying up. Hence the fires. And I was like, oh God, what are we going on about?
You know, in the absence of a logical explanation for stuff, people will always choose mystery and nonsense. And I mean, to expect that a dried up river is a sign of God's anger, I mean, that would be like me saying, well, the wind last night is a sure sign that God is angry with me. How about you realize like that Earth has been here for billions of years before humans came along.
Yeah.
That it will be here for a couple of billion years before the sun eats us all up and burns everything to a crisp, and that none of this is related to your organic existence, and that you stop being so full of yourself that you think everything's a sign from, you know, the creator, the higher power, designed you. Like the whole world, the whole universe, everyone else on planet Earth who's not clearly privy to the signs that you think you are, everything that's going around, galaxies swirling, gravity working, heat and pressure and chemistry of the highest order, the four great forces, all of this is designed so that you can be around at a time where a river dries up and the end of the world comes. Yeah, that's highly likely.
No,
I'm sure that, you know. But you don't want to get into those discussions sometimes because maybe everybody's having a fun time and people are, you know, relaxing, having a drink together. They've had a hard week at work. They've got problems. People have got problems, man. And
oh, they do.
To then have to spend your day arguing with people about stuff like that, where they are so convinced that they are right and that, you know, they know something that you don't, it's just not worth getting into. I mean, you're asking for just unhappy, nasty things.
You would hate to know where it segued, though, that whole conversation.
Where did it go?
It segued into NATO or BRICS. Mm. And I was like, God, guys.
All right.
Is this what they're talking about at Bryce now? Like,
this is what happens. It's like, these are the subjects. And you know, I have modified my position on religion because I'm a lot more understanding, tolerant. I'm a lot less militant atheist than I ever was, right? Because I think I was pretty unpleasant. And I think I upset a lot of people unnecessarily just by being so strident about my views. And actually, it's an ugly thing when people are too strident about their views, especially when it's stuff like religion, which people are going to argue about. But it is amazing that it's a pedestrian subject. In other words, there's a low barrier to entry for religion. I mean, you can be a total ignoramus and you can just glean the absolute basics. In fact, you could flip open your Bible on any given page, read a line, interpret it in one of a million ways, and convince yourself in your head that you've some amazing insight that everybody else has missed.
Yeah.
And there's no way to, what do they call it? It's unfalsifiable. So there's no way you can actually get to an answer that makes perfect sense. And the same goes for politics. We talk a lot of politics in this show. And I have to admit, in my spare time, I'm doing less and less of that. In fact, I consider it a real relief when I'm around people who we don't have to talk politics.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that gives me joy. There's nothing we can do about it as individuals. And it's not as if there's some easy, short, quick secret code. Politics is complicated because it's a bunch of people trying to get on with each other, trying to live together, trying to make society work. And some of those people have good intentions and some of them have bad intentions. But the reality is there isn't a correct answer in politics. In other words, you may think you know about NATO. You might think you know about the Ukraine and Russia conflict. We all have different opinions on that. Not all opinions on this are equally valid, it's worth saying.
Yeah.
But the only people who really know what is going on are the people on the ground fighting, or the leaders who are commanding those troops, or the politicians who are commanding the leaders of those troops. And even they only get a small window on the actual whole conflict, you know, because there's people don't tell the truth. They all have their agendas. It's just not worth getting into these things. I would rather talk about fun stuff and laugh.
Exactly.
And make good memories. And especially on your weekend, and for you, it was like your birthday week, to have to stand there, like argue with people about Russia and the Ukraine. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it can be very entertaining if you're in the mood for it. But I find, I don't know about you, less and less, it's the thing I want to do in my spare time.
It also just divides a room. Like, and that's the problem with it, is because all these people gathered together for one reason. And then they're asking a dumb question like that. And no view is going to, like, unless everyone is agreed to the same party or the same principle, which is never the case, no one's going to kind of, everyone's going to assume what kind of person you are based off the party or the idea that you voting for, and then they're going to find fault with it. And it's just, it brings up the stench in the room where everyone just kind of divides into their groups, you know?
Well, I mean, that's what happens in America now. Anytime you mention politics, because families get divided, friends stop talking to each other. People are moving. They're literally moving from one state to another because their politics are so divisive.
Yeah.
And you can't say I'm making that up, because you can actually see the population dynamics happening in real time in America. You know, people are moving out of certain states into others. They're going out of some cities into other places. And it's happening because it's just becoming impossible for people to live together. They don't even share the same values anymore. You know, America, you know, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for what, close on 280, 300 years, has been something that's held people together. They've all kind of gone, yeah, you know what, we might disagree about a few things, but this is the stuff we have in common. And that isn't even happening anymore. Just quickly to go back to where everybody is, because this is amazing. Here's Jim in England. Here's Tony in Oklahoma City. Here's a Saint in Switzerland.
Wow.
I mean, there really is a SM in Dubai, sitting in traffic in Dubai. And then I love this. Carl is like, I'm all the way in Edenvale fighting off the lesbians.
He's definitely got, he's in the worst place ever.
Oh, man. That is hilarious. You see where people, they're everywhere. I love this about the show. We really are getting people joining us in different time zones, totally different worlds. It's bloody amazing, right?
Yeah.
It really is. There's some. Is the river that you're talking about the Tigris, the Euphrates?
I think the Euphrates sounds familiar. I'm not sure if it's that one. But
those two rivers run through Mesopotamia, which is the old, you know, the land of the Assyrians, the land of the Babylonians, the land of the Persians later. I mean, it's a fascinating place. Probably the original cradle of humankind.
Yeah.
And if you are a you know, biblical scholar, the supposition is that is the land of Eden. You know, that's where men started to farm, started to settle in cities, started to build permanent dwellings, all of that stuff. And you can find cities like Ur, which is where Abraham was born. That's how old that area of the world is. It's a fascinating place. I mean, there's ziggurats there, which are these step pyramids that were built to honor the kind of pre monotheistic gods of Mesopotamia, Marduk and that kind of thing. And these were supposedly the inspiration behind the Tower of Babylon, too.
Sure.
Tower of Babel being something that was reaching up into the sky to try and get to God, you know.
Have you ever gone to any of these cities like Israel and just gone to
Israel? Israel's a country, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Sorry.
So I'd love to go to Mesopotamia. It's modern day Iraq though, so you don't want to go there. Not now.
Are you fascinated by the biblical stories to go and follow and check out actual?
I think anybody, even if you're not a religious person, I mean, yeah, I've got books behind me. Here's a book on the churches of like the Holy Land, which, I mean, for someone who's not, you know, a big believer, this is the kind of stuff. Turn it the right way around. I'm like George W. Bush who holds his book up. Like, churches of the Holy Land. I mean, this is fascinating stuff, you know. And these are buildings. Some of them are up to 100, 150 years after the death of Christ. I mean, it's an incredible place. And Jerusalem, I mean, who isn't fascinated by the fight that is going on, probably the world's most fought over piece of real estate in all of human history is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where, first of all, Solomon would have built his temple. Well, even before that, it's supposedly the site where Abraham sacrificed Isaac, or didn't, as the case may be. God stayed his hand. It's then the place of Solomon's temple, and the place of the second temple, then the place of the third temple, then the place of the Dome of the Rock, where it's, which is still there, the rock that supposedly Muhammad ascended into heaven from. This is the most hotly contested place on planet Earth if it comes to just geography, right?
Yeah.
So anyone who's interested in history, like, this place is full of secrets and full of mystery and full of deep, deep, significant meaning for all the people who, whether they're Jews who go and pray at the Wailing Wall, whether it's Muslims who go to the temple on top of that rock, whether it's Christians who want to be as close to the site where Jesus would have gone to minister and just near there where he would have been crucified. I mean, these are like the most incredible, meaningful places to the three great religions, the three great monotheisms.
I do find it fascinating how...
I would love to see that stuff. I mean, wouldn't you?
No, the thing is, I'm fascinated by how these parables, if you will, have been carried over for so many years. You know, there isn't one, I don't say there isn't one, but this is the most consistent kind of book that has been carried over for years. Stories have been told that are very similar. So I find it fascinating. But yeah, I'll just be very careful before I enter into these religious countries.
Yeah, it's just sometimes not worth it. But I'm just going to say strength to Congo Chris. Good luck with the lesbians in the East Rand. What can we say? It's Eden Vale, you know? I mean, listen, we joke about you. I'll take your lesbians in Eden Vale, Chris, and I'll raise you. It's not Chris. It was Carl.
It was Carl.
I'll take your lesbians in the East Rand, and I'll raise you the lesbians of Centurion. I reckon I win.
Are they worse?
Not worse, but I think Centurion's got more of them. I mean, if you're in the market for lesbians, Centurion's a good target-rich environment. I mean, you know, if you're a girl who's into girls, I'll take you to my local builder's warehouse on a Saturday. You'll find plenty of options, you know. And I've always stood up for the lesbians, and I'm not going to stop. So those are my people. You know? it's amazing that there are people now talking about, you know, the fall of civilizations is apparently a very good podcast. That sounds awesome. Thank you for that. That is from Congo, Chris. He says it's especially about the Assyrian and Sumerian empires that fell. Gareth, I listened to the show yesterday on my way back from work, and I must say the comedian guests are always by far the best. Even your mood improved from beginning to the end. Yeah, I mean, you were there, Ryan. I was like a bit grumpy at the beginning of the show, and then within like 10 minutes of Jason Goliath sitting down and talking to us, I was much better. And I said to him, he's got this job. He has to keep the whole country laughing. Not just him, but it's his job. And he's like, yeah, it's tough.
Well,
but he was
brilliant. He's also one of the few comedians we've had on where it doesn't, I'm not judging anyone, but like, it doesn't go into a depressing kind of state. He's just funny all the time, you know? It's the one thing I love about Jason. He's even funnier in person when you meet him. Like, he just cracks these wild jokes.
I wish I'd known his wife was sitting outside, because I didn't know until we finished the show that she was sitting there with him. We could have brought her in. I don't think she would have liked that very much, because she's not the kind of person who pays attention.
she likes to hang back, but she was laughing the whole time. Like, you couldn't, I know you couldn't hear it because the door is over here, but she was just in hysterics.
So the photo of Ryan and Jason that I actually put it on my Instagram last night looks like a family portrait. Very good. So you're a Mr. Beast fan, and we actually interviewed his girlfriend the other day.
Yeah.
I hear there's some controversy. He went to visit an orphanage in Cape Town, and he uploaded a video about the reconstruction of the Bapumele orphanage in Cape Town. he boasts about rebuilding it, but apparently somebody says that it had nothing to do with him. While he had good intentions to help, it is alleged that he ignored pleas from various humanitarian groups to stop his philanthropic stunt amid concerns that orphanages were a haven of violence, abuse, and neglect. The movement to end orphanages worldwide. I mean, this is incredible, right? So whether or not Mr. Beast actually gave them money, or, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, well, you brought awareness to this. So I don't see the problem.
Well, this is the thing, right? So he's got, if you follow Mr. Beast, he's got his normal channel, which he posts all of his entertaining content. And then he also has a Mr. Beast philanthropy channel, which is actually run by two South Africans. I can't remember the one, but the other one is the one I spoke to yesterday about, who I want to get on.
Yeah, his girlfriend mentioned that to us the other day.
Yes, Dan Mace. She was talking about it. Yes.
Right.
So okay. Dan Mace is a South African YouTuber, and he makes really, really awesome videos, and he recently moved out to LA. But I don't know if he's come back, because I know he's just recently had a child. So he's just taking a break off the philanthropy channel, but he's been running it for a little while. And basically, all of the money that Mr. Beast makes that he puts aside for the philanthropy channel goes into these orphanages. And for some reason, I don't know why, but they're starting in South Africa. They're rebuilding charities. They recently went to a few villages and just gave all the kids school shoes so that they don't have to walk barefoot there. And they do make videos.
Why are there these people? Why are these people saying that it's a stunt and that he shouldn't be doing this? And clearly they are anti-orphanage. And now they're making this Mr. Beast's problem. You know, there are a lot of people in this world who do nothing.
But that's it, right?
Bitch and moan about other people who do something. Like, get off your ass and you do something. If you're going to sit there complaining about other people, but you're going to do nothing yourself, I don't want to hear from you. Thank you very much.
And everyone says, no, you shouldn't do this stuff. You should keep it off camera and you should just do it in your spare time. But the whole thing is the philanthropy channel is monetized. And so he uses that money to reinvest into the charities and into, you know.
And also, I mean, do these people clearly don't understand economics for a start? That's why they're complaining about someone who's doing, even if he's just bringing awareness.
Yeah.
Like, let's just forget the money for a second. Let's say that he's just going there out of the kindness of his heart to show people that there's an orphanage in Cape Town. You know what will happen? There'll be, I don't know, 1,000 people who are watching who will actually donate money to that place. They'll find out about it. There are people who do this. Once they find out about a cause that really moves them, they get involved. That's how I got involved with Headway, for heaven's sake. Someone I know took me to one of their events. They said, meet these people. I met these people. I was like, I got to get involved.
Yeah.
Now, if Mr. Beast is the one introducing you, even if he doesn't give a cent to this orphanage, if he's the one who goes and introduces the rest of us to this Baphumelele orphanage, and even one person gets involved, donates their time, or a can of beans, or a blanket, or whatever, that's already worth it.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that he's got millions of people watching him, and that he has this unbelievable following all over the world, he's not even from South Africa. I don't know why anyone would think that this should be his priority, but he's here, he's doing stuff, yeah, which is amazing. And I don't understand this group that's claiming that he must stop his stunt because orphanages are bad. So first of all, they are conflating issues. First of all, if you don't like orphanages, then what you should be doing is explaining to the rest of us what the alternative is. So if you don't want an orphanage, where do you want kids without parents to go? What must happen to them?
Yeah.
Are you suggesting that you have a better plan? If you do, please, we're willing to hear it, because I don't think orphanages are anyone's first choice, right? No one goes, wow, you know, I wish I'd grown up in an orphanage. Said no one ever, but yeah. I don't see anything better. And in this day and age, we have a lot of kids who are abandoned. We have a lot of kids who grew up without parents. Maybe their parents both died. Something terrible's happened. They've been given up for adoption because their mom is like 16 or whatever, and she's still in school. You're not going to change all of that. And it's not Mr. Beast's fault, and it's not the kid's fault. So what do you suggest? Number one. Number two, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And number three, why are you picking on someone who's a public figure when nobody knows who you are? You see,
it's always so it's low hanging fruit. It's so easy just to pick on.
Listen, pick on. I'm so over nobodies and bullshit people on the internet thinking that their opinion is equivalent to the opinion of people who are actually doing things in society. Whether you are just a hardworking individual going to work, earning enough to pay for your family to live, if you're doing that and some snotty loser on X or on Instagram starts like flinging mud at you, I always think of it this way. You know, sometimes you'll drive past like a dirty, ragged, drunk, homeless person on Nyaupe or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You can never say that word properly. And you can either stop and have a conversation with this person, which nobody should do, because what's the outcome you're looking for there? Or you just get out of there as quickly as possible. It's like having an argument at a birthday party. It's not worth it. Rather, just move on. And the same goes for social media. You don't need to listen to all these moron people. They're adding no value to anywhere and to anyone. So, Mr. Beast, carry on doing what you're doing. I know Ryan's a big fan. I don't care if you're doing this for good or for bad reasons. The fact that you're bringing attention to them is awesome. Yeah. We'll take it. Thank you.
Exactly.
Anybody who has a problem with that, that's your problem.
He's doing more than government, so we'll take it.
And we don't know who these people are, by the way. It doesn't say who these people are. It just says, pleas from various humanitarian groups. Now, who are these humanitarian groups? If they were worth anything at all, we would know their names. We would know these people's faces. We don't know who they are. They're nobodies.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it staggers me that there are people, and I'm not grumpy, by the way, Sibu. I'm not grumpy. This is more like there are dumb things going on Earth. And it makes no sense to me that we are paying attention to the noise from the peanut gallery.
Exactly.
You know, this is a result. And one of the things I love about the internet is we can all talk and we can do what we're doing this morning. And that's great. But I come from a background of like media where you had to earn each listener's trust and you had to work for things. And it wasn't just like buying followers or clickbait or any of that shit. And to me, if you can't back this stuff up, which clearly these people can't, then I don't know what you expect people to do about that. How are you adding value in the world? Let's move on.
Yeah.
What did you want to say?
No, I was going to say, it's like, I don't know if you saw that video that went viral like a couple of weeks ago where they had those protesters in the middle of the road and some Texan policeman just got in his car and started like almost half ramming them.
Yeah, it's like environmental protests. You know, they never come up with solutions to the real problems. These people who will glue themselves to the road, just stop oil, they'll throw like porridge or whatever on paintings. They're just destructive. They want to break shit down, these people. And if you ask them a significant question, even in their area of interest, these are supposedly people so passionate about the environment that they will glue themselves to a road. And when you say to them, why are you fighting the British government, who are responsible for a tiny proportion of the world's carbon emissions? What are you doing about China and Russia? They have nothing. India, what do they have to say about that? Nothing. Because they haven't thought about it.
Mm-mm.
And if you haven't thought about that, why must I take you seriously?
Exactly.
You don't have any strategy to stop the countries in the world, two of them, India and China anyway, that are responsible for most of the emissions. You have no plan for that, but I must take you seriously when you're fighting with Rishi Sunak?
Yeah.
Come on. It's ridiculous. So speaking of stupidity, apparently the talk shows in America are still at loggerheads with striking writers. Bill Maher and Drew Barrymore, as well as Jennifer Hudson, were about to start their shows up again. Bill Maher hasn't done a show for, I don't know, 5 or 6 months now because of this writer's strike. I used to listen to his podcast every day, and he's doing his own podcast, which is from his house. But they haven't done a new real-time show for months. And there's this huge writer strike in Hollywood. They're arguing because they're saying that the entertainment industry has changed a lot. Streaming has stolen the profits from their material that they used to be paid. These people just don't seem to understand that the entertainment world has changed, right? Like Netflix and Amazon, these are the powerful entities in Hollywood at the moment. It's not the studios that used to run things. Now it's internet companies.
Yeah.
Amazon in particular is a behemoth in that space. Anyway, these guys are like, oh, we want more money. So they've been on strike for months and nobody cares. By the way, no one's missing Jimmy Fallon or Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Kimmel. No one's missing them.
I saw that actually they're putting together a live show and they're going to be touring the US and they said that all the proceeds from that are going to go to the writers.
Please.
All of them are like coming together to put on this live show. Please. And I'm like, oh. You know,
like if you took Jimmy Kimmel's salary for his late night show and you divided it by the number of writers he's got, and he's got a ton of writers, but they'd all get hundreds of thousands of dollars in this writer's strike. They'd all come back to work. But he won't do that. So instead, they're going to do this publicity stunt. Come on. You know what? Also, why are you listening to striking workers? Because those people who are striking are not all the people who work on the show. You know, Ryan, when you do a TV show, you've got people who do lighting, people who do sound, people who do the actual filming, people in studio making the mix, people who are editing. You've got runners, you've got guest bookers, you've got all kinds of people who are not writers, who frankly are now also out of a job. Because the writers demand more.
Yeah.
I say just fire the writers. You can find new writers. And everybody else wants to come back to work, including the show hosts. I mean, Bill Maher and Drew Barrymore said they were going to start their shows up again. And then these striking writers were like, oh, no, you're not. I mean, you're being held ransom by these people. So get rid of it. Well, I just say fire these people.
That's it, right? I mean, Drew Barrymore, it's an issue and apology because she was going to air, her show was going to air. It must have been already pre-recorded and ready to air. And they were going to air it. And she actually pulled it and said, I'm so sorry, I'll wait till the strike's over. But I mean, if they didn't bring it up, she wouldn't have cared.
So this relates to the story that we got into just now about this orphanage of Mr. Beast. Because what's missing in society at the moment is people who are not pressured by a mob. We need people with some backbone, with some courage. And a lot of people talk a big game. Like, I stand up for whatever, free speech or for workers' rights or for democracy. Well, people claim these things. And when it comes to the crunch, they cower and they apologize like Drew Barrymore has. She should have said, fuck you. Like, I'm not, you go and ask for more money somewhere else. I don't need you. I'll hire new writers that have never worked before. I'll give them a chance. If they're shitty at it, then I'll look like an idiot, but I'll take the risk. I'll have the courage of my convictions.
Yeah.
But instead, she folds. She falls down like a sheep.
She folded so hard. It was embarrassing.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just don't apologize to these people. I don't know why everybody's so scared of this online mob, because those of us who have stood up to them, and I can claim that I have, there's evidence all over the place to show that. I don't give a shit what they say. Those people are happy and successful anyway.
Yeah. I mean,
so what are you afraid of? If you're Drew Barrymore and Bill Maher, you have so much money. You have such a great life. You're not going to lose a thing by standing up to these nobodies on the internet. So why do you let them push you around? Why do you let your own writers tell you what to do? They wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for you. In the case of Bill Maher, if he didn't put that show together and he wasn't the host of that show, no one would watch it. No one's coming for your writing.
Exactly. And I mean, also, the internet's providing a big space for people these days. If any of those hosts really wanted to, if they decided to write off their contracts with the, you know, with the television guys, like NBC and all those guys, if they started their own YouTube channel and they got, as you said, like intern writers, they could easily get, you know, thousands of people watching on YouTube every day.
It would cost them really a whole lot less.
Yes.
Plus, they could create employment. You know, they could take new talented young people who are desperate to get into show business, give them a chance. Instead, they're being held to ransom by these like necrotic idiots who don't understand that entertainment has changed, that the whole game has changed.
And we speak about Mr. Beast, but if you go look at like his business, there are so many people that have left the Mr. Beast company. Now he employs over 200 people. There are so many people that have left, and they've all put out videos like, you know, why I quit working with Mr. Beast. Because he's got a schedule, and if you can't keep up with it, you're off. And that's why his channel is so successful, because he doesn't take this whole thing of, if you don't want to work, then don't, and he'll find someone else. And that's why he's doing so well.
So Congo, Chris is right on the money here. So right. I couldn't agree with you more. He says, here's a refreshing idea. Why don't these talk show hosts stop being shills and left-wing corporate mouthpieces? Imagine a world where they told us what they actually think and not a pre-approved script.
Yeah.
Well, ironically, that's one of the reasons I like Bill Maher, and he's always been one of those people who stood up to this nonsense. Clearly now he's been pressured into folding.
Well, I mean, if you look at the case of like a Drew Barrymore, she's been in the system since she was like 14, if not younger.
No, 6 years old, dude. Six. She was on E.T. Yeah.
So
she was on E.T.
I would imagine somebody her age being in the business she's been in for so long, I don't think she knows how to do it on her own. And that's why the industry has kind of always treated her really well, and she's just gone with it. There's been no kind of downside for it, but I suppose this is what it comes with.
Well, she's got no backbone. And I'm sorry, Drew Barrymore seems like a very sweet person. She's like a little bit like woo-woo. You know, she kind of, you can see she's grown up and lived her whole life in entertainment. So she doesn't know what real people go through. But that's not her fault.
No.
And I don't begrudge her that. But what I think is sad is that the one thing she does understand is that entertainment is a cutthroat business. And there is no time and there is no leeway given to people who are not pulling their weight. So fire the writers. Stand up for yourself.
I mean,
get back to work. Maybe if you don't get back to work, we'll all realize we didn't need you in the first place. How about that?
We were talking about Jason yesterday, right? If you go speak to half of these comedians, they have to write their own shows. They don't have writers. They have to come up with all of their own stuff, all of their skits. They have to like South Africans, if we had a platform like what those guys in America have, geez, we'd never be short of writers or entertainers. Anything like that.
I've done what, 3 or 4 TV shows, and I still had to write most of the stuff myself. So, you know, if you're going to do it, just do your own work.
Yeah.
How about you do your own work? That would be nice. Start there. So the two hilarious stories, I think they're hilarious because we were talking about like bears the other day. It came up in a conversation. We were talking about how stupid panda bears are because they really are dumb, right? I mean, pandas are, they're very cute, and that's why we love them so much, because they're like black and white and they're fluffy and they like really slow and they're cuddly and we've seen soft toys but pandas are so dumb that they literally have to be coaxed into having sex so they can perpetuate the species. Now, you know, every creature from single-celled organisms to lizards to fish to birds knows that if they want to exist, the whole point of existing is make more of yourself. Your DNA is programmed to do these fucking pandas. They don't even do that. They have to put Viagra in their bamboo shoots or whatever it is. They have to coax these things. They have to play nice music to protect them from any kind of outside influence. And they still won't have sex. The most basic thing that humans know is integral to us. All animals are driven by a sex drive and a survival drive. These stupid pandas, they are so useless. And we got into this whole discussion about how if a species like that is going to die out, then what are you going to do to stop it? You know, it's like the dodo was so devoid of defense mechanisms. It couldn't fly. It was much bigger than a chicken, so it was good meat.
Yeah.
And it lived on this island, Mauritius, where, you know, if sailors docked there and they were hungry, why would you go after something difficult when you just get a dodo? And they were so dumb, they came right up to people. That's why they're extinct today.
Oh, they were just really friendly? Or
They were stupid. They didn't know danger, and they'd never seen humans. And then they became food, and the last one was like killed in, I think, the late 1800s. So I know China is actually, because China comes under a lot of criticism on this show, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
But China have been doing their very best to keep pandas going. And they've brought in all kinds of laws, and they've got, you know, conservationists working around the clock to keep these stupid bears alive. And they're having some degree of success. But because they're cute, we like pandas. Other bears are fucking dangerous, like the wild black bear in North America. I mean, this thing will... Have you seen that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, The Revenant, where that bear like attacks him?
I haven't.
Oh my God, it's like, when a bear attacks you, you've got very little chance of survival. Like a big angry brown bear or a black bear, or, you know, you're finished. And a polar bear is hugely dangerous. Those things are monsters.
Yeah.
No. And they're big, you know, that it's like standing up on its hind legs is like twice the size of a human. So this black bear was found at Walt Disney World. I mean, talk about the place where there are the most children running around.
Yeah, exactly.
You won't know what to do. So a wild black bear was found at Disney World on Monday. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission captured and relocated it before it could do any, you know, like eat a child or whatever. But the disturbance temporarily closed a number of rides at the Magic Kingdom.
How does a bear just turn up and no one knows about it?
I don't know. They're roaming the wild.
I feel like Disney's the kind of place, I've never been there, but I feel like it's the kind of place where if you haven't paid or you're not getting in, like if you don't have a band, they will find you, but they'll find a bear just roaming around.
Man, that's just unreal.
No, you know what? We have a lot of problems here in South Africa, but I assure you bears are not one of them.
That's not one of them. No, thank God. But then there's another story in the news. A family of bears broke into a Krispy Kreme donut truck in Alaska and ate 20 packages of donuts.
I feel like that's light work.
That's hilarious. A mama black bear and her cubs got a treat last week, Krispy Kreme donuts. A delivery driver left his van open while he dropped off donuts at a shop. The bears ate 20 packs of donuts and 6 packs of 3-pack chocolate donuts. So these things, these bears went to town. And apparently, apparently, like bears will hang around the rubbish bins because they realize like it's much easier to just scavenge from humans than it is to go out into the forest and hunt something, you know. So they now they come into town and you'd wake up in the morning and like go outside with your coffee in the Alaskan winter and it's freezing. And you're standing there with your coffee in your hands. And then suddenly you hear like a noise. And there's a bunch of fucking bears like tearing into your rubbish bins. I think that's hilarious. I mean, we have problems, as you say, but we don't have that problem.
Can you imagine if bears roamed around here? Because there are so many people scattered all over the country. If bears just popped up, so many people would die. Like,
oh, man. So Dumi brings up Cocaine Bear, which we'll talk about in a second. But Sanele says, a bear will come after you everywhere, on land, on water, on snow. It's a true beast. Listen, they're scary, hey? If it's black, attack. If it's brown, hit the ground. If it's white, say goodnight. Those are the different kinds of bears, according to Joe Rogan. Well, yeah, so apparently the brown one's the most dangerous one of all.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, Carla makes a good point. How long does it take you in Disney World to figure out whether someone is in a costume or whether it's a real bear?
Well, that's on the money. That's on the money. Are their costumes that realistic?
Yeah. Oh, joking atheist says, it's not as dangerous as my ex-wife. I was an inch away. People are hilarious. Yeah. Dumi says it sounds like Cocaine Bear. Now, that, what a movie. I mean, I did eventually go and see Cocaine Bear.
I haven't seen this movie.
So you know what the story is.
No, I haven't seen this movie before. Cocaine Bear.
All right, so story is this guy was trying to fly a cocaine package across the United States. And he was in one of those little light planes. And he realized like the cops were after him and they were going to get him at the airport. So he had to dump the cocaine.
Oh, right.
So he threw it out of the plane while the plane was flying. Oh, and it landed in this forest. And it was like a big bag of cocaine.
Sure.
Like, I don't know, a couple of kilograms. And supposedly, this is a true story based on true events. Supposedly, this bear then like stumbled upon this packet of cocaine in the middle of the forest and took a real liking to it and turned for a window period of a couple of hours before it had a heart attack or whatever, because I don't know what the actual story is. But for that period of time, this was the most alpha monster killer to ever roam the earth.
Oh my gosh.
Well, since the, at least, you know, the advent of humanity. And this thing, this thing was unstoppable. Like it could literally run 10 times faster than any other bear. I mean, it exhausted itself and it must have had the most incredible, like just jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing was just monstrous in every sense of the word.
Weren't we discussing cocaine sharks the other day?
Love that story. Yeah. And then did you see that they're thinking of making a movie called Shark? Let me just find out. Shark-a-launch.
Shark-a-launch.
It's like an avalanche with sharks. I kid you not. I'll even show you. There's a picture of it. I think it's probably bullshit, but it's worth.
Yeah. It's worth.
I mean, look at this.
Diving.
It's so hilarious. Dude, this is so funny. This is the movie poster supposedly with Tara Reid.
Oh my.
Shark Alarm. Tara Reid, Sean White, and Tim Allen. And it says Shark Alarm. Snow is frozen water. The science is sound.
Oh God.
Jesus. We'll never, by the way, we're doing a new shark series with Anthony Meadere.
Yes.
You know, from Blind History. And that's going to be amazing. He talks about the great shark attacks of history. And I mean, this is real like jaw-dropping stuff. If you're into sharks and you're into like stories about how people were attacked and eaten by these animals. And, you know, there's a lot of hype around it, but some of it is just absolutely terrifying. So you've got to check this out once it's ready. It's going to be very cool. And people just love sharks. I mean, look at Sharknado. Now you got Shark-a-launch.
I just find like some of these people are fearless, right? I mean, when we were speaking to Anthony the other day, when he was busy with it, he showed us a few of these videos and these sharks come up out the water and they like treat them, you know, if they're misbehaving or whatever, they like punch their nose, but otherwise they'll like stroke these sharks. And I'm like, you guys playing with your life. This is not so, I don't delve into the ocean.
I don't want to spoil any of this either, but, they were talking about how you basically hypnotize the shark and then it becomes docile and it kind of like it wants to snuggle up. Now, I've never thought of sharks as being docile and friendly. But
exactly.
That's what they're telling us in this podcast. You'll hear it. It's fascinating stuff. Ricky says, imagine Gareth finds a crocodile in his garden. I will be on the roof of my house quicker than you can.
I feel like
I don't think crocodile.
I feel
they
like
can't
Alice
climb.
Would go toe to toe with it though.
Oh sweet Jesus. She'd be eaten in one gulp.
No, I know.
I mean, Alice is not even capable of like being a watchdog. She's lying here at the moment. She's just sleeping. And if someone broke into my house while I was asleep, she would run up with her tail wagging and lick them and she'd probably go straight up to the crocodile. I mean, she'd bark at it, and then the crocodile would just go.
Yeah.
That would be the end of it. Congo Chris says, yes, crocodile. Cocaine Bear is a true story. It is. I'm imagining, says Carl, this bear with hookers and strippers at a casino.
going to be like one of those movies that come to life.
It's unreal.
I promise you, if Disney made a film about that, it would be more entertaining than any Disney movie that's coming out now. So,
can we just talk about how disappointing Apple is with their latest update and their new phone?
Yes.
Because we briefly referred to this the other day, and I know you've got feelings about this. Someone I know was actually watching the event live. You know, there's some people who are just like such fans.
Yeah.
That they watched the actual unveiling of the iPhone 15 and what's new on iOS 17. And I mean, there's some people, I've got a friend who he always seems to get these updates. He goes and like signs up to be one of the beta testers. And then he gets these iOS updates like a month, 2 months, 3 months before. And then, you know, he knows all this stuff long before the rest of us to find out what's going on.
So Mash used to try and talk me into that. But for me, I'd rather wait for them to perfect the software because I don't want to deal with bugs when I'm trying to get through my day to day. Like it doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you. I'm no genius. I'm not going to be able to sort that out if it fucks up my phone.
No, exactly. But also I find the Apple events these days are so lame. Like, you know, before when I was doing a test call with, I was chatting to Rich Mulholland before he came on. And, you know, he does a lot of, is it motivational speaking or just general speaking?
His whole business is presentations. Yes. And he can talk about it. I mean, he's very good at putting those together. So he has so many areas of interest. He could talk about pretty much anything.
That's it. And we were discussing this. And, you know, he was saying that, you know, a lot of this kind of what he does is it's a dying thing. Like so many people are moving to the digital presentations where they record and just play it out. And but he says that the stage is the one true place where you can feel, you know, if what like the audience can pick up if you're talking nonsense or if you know what you're talking about, because they'll boo you off if it's not what they want to hear. And so I brought up this Apple event because when Steve Jobs is still around, do you remember when he presented the iPhone? Live
it was
stage.
Very good.
It was brilliant.
It was so good.
And
by the way, I mean, he truly had breakthrough ideas. Apparently, he was a monster to work for.
If
you read, the famous biography about Steve Jobs, and for those people who are lazy and have seen the movie, I mean, he was a genius, but he was a monster as well. He was like a big brown bear, you know?
Exactly. And so, my whole thing is, I preferred it when Apple used to actually fill up a full room of people and present on the night, not these digital recordings that they're now playing out to everyone that are like 3 hours long explaining, you know, why the iPhone 15 is now just basically an iPhone 14, which was the iPhone 13 and the iPhone 12, but now it's just got a USB-C port. Like, and they were forced to do it. Like, and that's the other thing. They were forced to put the USB-C port in because the European Union said if they don't conform, they're not going to put it on the shelves.
So is that why they've got a USB-C port?
That's exactly why.
Okay, because, that's like the only thing that's different about the iPhone 15.
Exactly.
Why would you go and buy it? Why would you spend? And these things are expensive. I mean, what's a new iPhone 15 now? Is worth like 30,000 rand or something?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Oh, I'd say even more now. I mean, because they've eliminated the smaller memories. So now you can't get the 128 gig anymore. So now I think it's only 256 and up, which means they're still keeping that price range. They're not dropping the price of those. So there's no real
Steve
change.
Jobs. Steve Jobs overrated, says V-Rus. They've released new iPhones since he died. Well, look, I mean, I'm an Apple fan, right? I use a lot of their products and I'm in the ecosystem. I'm trapped. And there's no way out for me. I'm screwed. I have to stick to Apple. And I will.
Same.
But I wish that we could have some truly breakthrough things happen here because like the last couple of updates have just been very ordinary.
So
that's all I'm saying.
I've heard Elon Musk is working on the Tesla phone. And I think if it came to it, that would probably be the only thing I would maybe move to.
You are like the world's biggest Elon Musk fan, so you'll do anything he says.
No, I'm fascinated like, because
you're a disciple.
He's putting like so from what I hear, he's putting like solar panels on the phone so that you can leave your phone out in the sun and it will charge. Like, things like that are fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, these solar panels. You need a pretty big solar panel to charge a phone.
But you
just put a little thing here on the back and that's enough to charge the phone properly.
Well,
sorry, it's not good.
I'd like to see what they're going to do. But my whole thing is, what phones have become now is essentially we own walking billboards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before phones you had to call and you had to text, but now what they've done is they've made this phone like a walking billboard. Essentially, everything you see, especially on social media, is like ads. You know.
Well, that's exactly right. We were talking about this yesterday with Jason.
And they're pushing everything to your phone. I mean, I've had three updates from that Eskom app today. And you go watch all these ads and you just realize the social media is just one big like advertising banner.
You are the product, everybody.
Exactly.
Sorry. What can we say? So Leanne says, this is interesting. This is a story like Leah Rimini, who got out of Scientology. She says, I used to be an Apple person, but once you get out, you realize there's nothing special about Apple. I hardly noticed the difference having moved to Samsung Android. Ooh.
I don't know if I could say that. I'm so wrapped up in it.
She got out of the cult. So yeah. Well done, Leanne.
Yeah, if you can.
I tell you, fantastic. Good for you. I watch the events every year, says Sanele. Oh, wow. I like the events, but they've become so bad. They're trying too hard to be PC when their stupid, ugly HODs all present. It's a mess. Yeah. Well, apparently, Apple made this terrible, terrible ad where Tim Cook like starts having an argument with Mother Nature, and Mother Nature comes. This is an actual ad they made. I mean, whoever did this should be like flogged in the public square. But apparently, they've got this actress to play. No, really. So, like, you could look it up. I refuse to play it on the show. We'll lose audience if I do.
Yeah.
But look it up. Tim Cook, Mother Nature video. You'll see it's so
I'll take a look
bad.
At it today.
I saw a write-up of something to do with that on one of the websites that I go to. Anyway, listen, it's almost 7 o'clock. When we come back, yesterday I was blown away and I had to explain to Jane who this was because she's in town to do two live shows. She's actually got four of them, two in Joburg and two in Cape Town. Her name is Candace Bushnell. Do you know who that is? Jane obviously didn't.
Yeah.
So if you lived in the 90s and you didn't know the show Sex and the City, and I knew the show, I knew of it, never watched it. I've never been a Sarah Jessica Parker fan, and this show is definitely designed for women. So it was not a show that I could have got into, even if I'd tried. But I know there are loads of people in South Africa who were massive, massive fans of, you know, there were the four girls on Sex and the City. I had to look this up, but I remember the characters and I remember the actresses. I remember Kim Cattrall played this woman called Samantha, who was like the horny, like she's constantly just trying to get laid, like a guy, but she was this blonde girl, right? And there's Sarah Jessica Parker, who's Carrie Bradshaw. And Carrie Bradshaw, CB, is the same as Candace Bushnell, CB, the woman who wrote the columns.
Yes. On Sex
and the City. And then there was there are two others. Miranda something. She ran for like some political office recently. She's a lesbian and she decided to run for political office. And then there's another one, some little mousy brown-haired girl. Anyway, these four women, Sex and the City, it was a breakthrough hit because all these women all over the world who wanted to be glamorous and successful and exciting and independent, and they didn't want to be like the stock standard kind of housewife character that was mostly staple for women in television. And this show took off. It was massively successful. I don't know how many seasons they did, but it was a big deal.
It was long.
And especially in New York, you know, it was just so like typically New York. Anyway, Candace Bushnell was in the studio with us yesterday. We recorded an interview with her. That's coming up just now. I think you'll enjoy it, even if you didn't watch Sex and the City, because she and I get into a couple of things about whether women are actually happier today since, you know, feminism has given them supposedly all of these things that men had. And you'll hear there's some equivocation from her about whether things are better or worse right now. And also how New York has changed. There's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want to listen to that, that's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back just after the break. Stick around. Ryan and I back in a second. CliffCentral.com.